Second hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Joe Rex Road, Adam Vingan. And we're going to head to our guest line now. Talk a little Vols football, or Vols anything, actually, with Mike Wilson, Knoxville News Sentinel. Michael, how are you today?
Oh, we're doing great. And yeah, Vols anything. I like that as my my beat title, Vols anything beat writer.
Yes. Well, you know what? Let's actually quickly go off topic, off football. Some movement on the baseball front, some good movement for Tony Vitello's team. Also, I noticed, I think Baseball America had them number two, really early rankings. But I think they had the Vols number two and Vanderbilt number eight going to next year. But give us the latest on Vitello's ridiculously good roster.
Yeah, they made a big pull when they landed Griffin Merritt, Cincinnati transfer outfielder, hit 315 with 19 homers last year. He has a big right-handed bat, which was key. They got a lot of lefties in the lineup right now when you look at guys like Blake Burke. So that balances it out a little bit. And they obviously turned over their whole outfield as well. So bringing a good outfielder with a lot of experience, something like 150-ish starts in his career in that range. So that's a big pull. Pulled a former weekend starter from Charlotte, Andrew Lindsay, who didn't play last year, but is transferring in here. And obviously he'll have a role there, not as a weekend starter, given what Tennessee has. But I think you could argue the biggest pull of all is getting Camden Sewell back for another year. Just as such a versatile pitcher out of the bullpen who started in some SEC tournament games, throws twice in a weekend sometimes, closes games, multiple innings. I mean, that's just such a big pull with a ton of experience.
Yeah, it's already, you know, I think arguably the best rotation in college baseball next year, but then you fill in some of those gaps. Looks awfully good. One more baseball question, just because it came to mind as I think about this remade outfield. Do you think that this team next year is going to have a very different personality with Beck and Gilbert gone? I mean, Vitello's still Vitello.
Yeah, there's still going to be a fiery competitive nature to it all. But certainly I think we saw a couple points last season where maybe it went beyond fiery and competitive and into just yikes.
Yikesville. So
I think that'll be a little bit different. And
early, so it's been a week now, right? I mean, I was there with you. Well, I guess it was a week ago today when, I don't know about you, but I was very pleasantly surprised to see some team stuff. It looks like you guys have been mostly getting period zero through two since then, right? So basically some individual stuff. But anything that day, yeah, the Squirrel White jumps out at you, of course. I mean, I think he's as advertised. I like Dylan Sampson, too. I like Turrentine at corner. But those are some early impressions for me. And Brew McCoy, I mean, the physicality of that guy is clear. Anyone right now jumping off the page to you that maybe you weren't anticipating being intrigued by?
You know, you mentioned Brew McCoy. I walked past him on Sunday morning, yesterday, and I hadn't been up close with him, obviously, and I was like, who's this tight end? I mean, it's just a big-bodied wide receiver that I love the idea of seeing play across from Cedric Tillman. That pairing would be so interesting with whomever you throw in the slot, with Hyatt, Squirrel White, Merrill, kind of whoever's in that mix, but just physically impressive. I've also been impressed. Jabari Small just looks more built out and ready to play a consistent role, and he was so nice last year in the role he played. I think he looks more built up and equipped and ready to have a bigger presence there. And I'm going to give a generic one here. The whole secondary just looks better. I think there's just more players there. You talk about Turrentine, Wesley Walker. I mean, you see more guys. And they have a lot of choices there with Christian Charles, Warren Burrell, a lot of guys in that mix. Jalen McCullough's back, Trayvon Flowers is back, so you probably expect them to be the starting safeties, but there's so many guys for those other three spots, whereas last year it was pretty clear who it was going to be. So I'm very interested to see all of those guys compete through this preseason.
Yeah, and you want competition, you want depth, you want people to have to fight for their spot. I guess my question would still be, well, that's good that you have more people. Do you have legit starting SEC cornerbacks who, you know, are going to lock down those spots and you know, give you a chance for some consistency? I still wonder about that.
I do too, and I think you're going to start seeing that stuff. I believe the first preseason scrimmage is tomorrow, so that'll be a window where some of that takes place for this team. Christian Charles, to me, is the intriguing guy, just as someone who can probably play anywhere in the secondary, but he's taller and fast, so him at cornerback is an intriguing possibility to me.
You mentioned small, and I'm with you. I think that people forget. First of all, obviously, Tyon Evans was terrific last year. He's a special player. And it would, he's going to be playing for the Louisville Cardinals this year. That's a big loss for the Vols. And L's down for Michelle in the booth. It's a loss for the Vols. It's too bad, whatever exactly happened there went down. It didn't work out. But when Jabari Small was healthy last year, I didn't think there was like a huge drop off. I'm with you. I think he could have a really big year. I wonder behind him, I mentioned Samson. We know they just got Dixon the transfer. You've got another freshman, and of course you have Jalen Wright. How do you see that? Is there any clarity at all for you after Jabari Small?
I mean, I'd look at Jalen Wright right now as the number two back, given the experience and given him returning. I think he had about 85-ish carries last year, so he got in the mix. And he was really nice in the spring when he enrolled early two seasons ago. But I think he was a little bit dinged up early last year, if memory serves. So that might have had a bigger role at that point. After him, Justin, I think it's Williams-Thompson, I believe, or Thompson-Williams, but I think it's Williams-Thompson. Very talented back, four-star kid that picked Tennessee over Auburn and the likes of that. He's going to be in that mix too. Dixon, when he arrives, gets in that mix, get it going. So they've got options back there, but last year they talked about it. They want to play three backs, SEC play, the physicality of it all. They want to get guys in there. The one thing they do need to establish is kind of, do they have a bigger option as a back? Is that one of the freshmen, Williams-Thompson being the bigger one of the two? Because they don't have, Tyon Evans was just a big dude. They don't have that guy necessarily right now, so that might be that piece they look for as well.
Yeah, Williams-Thomas for the record, but it's camp for all of us. That's all right. You were in the neighborhood, but 6'2", 210, and he looks. I mean, he looks like a guy who could give you a little bit of that physical presence. It comes down to how much you can trust a freshman and things like that. I mean, obviously, he could be in situations and give them a little bit, because they got to get better in short yardage. They got to get better in the red zone. I guess I could look at that offense and say, short yardage, red zone, I could see that being issues kind of consistently. You get a little bit of give and take with a scheme like that. But you should still be able to pick more of those up, I would think. And, of course, a huge part of that is the offensive line. Do you have any a weekend feel for how that's going to shake out? I mean, really, it's four spots that are pretty much clear, and then left tackle, but I feel like Mincy is going to end up being the guy.
Yeah, left tackle is definitely the one, and it's also the one on the offensive line that you need to know. With Gerald Mincy, Dane Davis, and Jeremiah Crawford are kind of the three there. We've seen Dane Davis and Jeremiah Crawford, more Dane Davis than Crawford last season, and both were pretty inconsistent. Mincy coming in from Florida is the interesting one, without a doubt. We got Glenn Ellerbe last week, and he didn't really have a clear pecking order yet. Said he hopes by the end of the first scrimmage that you kind of know what that order is, and then by the second one you have it kind of solidified, and you then throw as many reps as you can with the five starters. But the rest of the offensive line is pretty darn settled. I mean, you know who Cooper Mays is and what he does. You know who Jerome Carvin is and what he does, and Darnell Wright's played a ton of football. So that's your center all the way across to the right. So you've got a good idea right there.
So the season ticket sales, I'm not going to say I'm surprised, but it's pretty well above goals and expectations, I would say. You're talking, what, is it 59,000 season tickets sold?
Right around there, yeah.
That speaks to me of a fan base. Look, of course it speaks of a starved fan base, right? But also of a fan base that has a lot of excitement for this particular team. Do you think that that's a comment on just this team, you know, Hendon Hooker, what he did, the excitement, the entertainment level, or where do you think Vols fans are on Heupel? Because it is early. Some caution is advised at this point, but I feel like there's quite a bit of excitement.
There is, and I think it goes into a couple of things you said for sure. It's a fan base that's desperate to see football win again, and they feel like they got a little taste of that last season just with what Heupel did in his first year, especially in context of what Tennessee fans had just experienced with Jeremy Pruitt and such a horrible final season and just underachieving. So it was just a complete burst of life, I think, into this fan base. I think also it goes into the brand. It very much is what fans are paying to see, and it's entertainment now. It's not 22 points a game for basically three seasons. It's a team that's going out there and scoring points, doing a ton of things offensively, playing fast, playing exciting, and I think that's really what the fan base is latching onto is, I mean, you're paying to go and see something exciting, and they're enjoying that.
Mike Wilson, Knoxville News Sentinel. Thank you, Michael, as always, and we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Glad to do it. See y'all.
That was Mike Wilson, Knoxville News Sentinel, on the Vols. And when we come back on Robbie and Rex Show, we will react to Mike, talk a little Vols football here on Robbie and Rex Show. 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Let's give some tickets away. Pilgrimage Festival, September 24th, 25th. The park at Harlandsdale Farm in Franklin. You've got Chris Stapleton, Brandi Carlile, the Avett Brothers, John Batiste, and more. How about, all right, what's that look on your face?
I didn't know that Chris Stapleton was going. I want these tickets.
Oh, well, I guess I'm going to try to give these tickets away unless Michelle steals away with them.
You're burying the lead on some of the other bands.
Yeah, what's your lead there?
Better Than Ezra. Duh.
Better Than Ezra's in there?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well, this could be a concert for everyone.
Yes.
This is great.
I tell you what. So, what, third caller? Third caller gets this pair of tickets right now at
615-737-1025.
Yep, thank you. But I was going to say, I did remember the number. It's
driven
our
by Wilson County
Hyundai.com. Driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com.
Driven by Wilson County.
Yes, that's right. All right, third caller. Get those. We're talking Vols. Just talk to Michael Wilson. Call him Michael.
Yeah.
He goes by Mike, but call him Michael. Interesting stuff there. I feel like, you know, the defense, I still have my questions. I still have my concerns. If he's right that, you know, if the depth at corner can make for good corners, you know, Turrentine, Walker, they got some options out of the portal. You know, I think that they could be solid. You know, I like the linebacking situation with Jeremy Banks leading the way. I like some of their talent up front. I definitely like Byron Young and Tyler Barron. Want to see more depth behind them too. But you've got someone calling for a Georgia or Alabama win by Tennessee?
Yes. Yeah, so Roman Harper, who I believe now works for the SEC Network, I believe. All I remember him is from his days with my New Orleans Saints.
Yes.
But he was on the Paul Feinbaum show. This is courtesy of A to Z Sports. And Roman Harper predicted that Tennessee will beat one of Alabama or Georgia in 2022. He said, quote, "This team, being the Vols, is a team that's on the rise right now. Tennessee is going to play big-time spoiler this year. They will beat Georgia or Alabama." He then goes on to say that he thinks Tennessee is the third-best team in the SEC. He also said they would have had two more wins last year if they started Hendon Hooker from the start of the season. So first of all, you were out there. You saw it firsthand. We just talked to Mike Wilson. So you have a good sense of what this Tennessee football team could look like this season. Do you think they are good enough or couldn't be good enough on one day to beat Alabama or Georgia this season?
Yeah, it's a toughie. I mean, look, is it possible? Sure.
What would have to happen? What would have to go right from the Vols' perspective?
Well,
everything, but specifically.
Yeah, you know, you go back to like the Alabama game last year. I mean, they hung in well in Tuscaloosa for a lot of that game. They were right there, and then Alabama breaks it open.
That tends to happen. Third.
It does, and you know, it's just I look at Alabama this year. I mean, to me, I think Alabama is at least a half notch ahead of Georgia, in my opinion, with what they bring back. Now, that's in Knoxville, so you keep that in mind. So I'd be very surprised, okay? I'd be very surprised if they won either game. You know, of course, they have to go to Athens to play Georgia. But it's not impossible. You know, with Tennessee, again, I think they're going to have to win some of these swing games by – large scoring output. I mean, I think that they're going to be in some shootouts, and that's what those games would probably have to be too, right? I mean, you just have
which
to have,
games are you looking at in that regard?
Well, their swing games to me are, you know, the big games on the schedule. I'm putting losses on those two games. I'm doing
okay,
that.
So sorry, Roman saying, Harper.
Yeah, well, again, it's not impossible, but it would be either one would be a massive upset, right? And What happens in a game like that? Look, I mean, Texas A&M beat Alabama last year. I just think this Alabama team is better. Now, this Georgia team lost a lot to the NFL. I think they're still going to be very good. They're a national contender. Maybe they're a little more vulnerable. But either way, it's going to take one of those days where Hendon Hooker is absolutely just spectacular, and his receivers are spectacular, and they answer time and again and again and again offensively, because I just do not like the Vols matchups defensively in those games. But as far as the swing games you asked about, you know, Pittsburgh, that is a huge game, week two, to have a special season. You got to go in and get them back for winning in your place last year. Florida, you have to beat Florida this year. That's the number one, that's the most important game of the schedule this year.
Probably not.
We hadn't even gotten to the Kentucky game yet.
Yeah, because Kentucky's going to win.
Well, LSU is another huge one in Baton Rouge. And then, of course, Kentucky at Neyland Stadium, which, you know.
Probably not.
Well, like it or not, they're BBN.
So I'm thinking Tennessee. I'm going to dress up in all Tennessee orange for the game when I'm in Neyland Stadium, and then have my Kentucky gear underneath,
and then
when they win, have those old school basketball pants with the buttons on the sides, and
the tearaway pants,
rip them off, and have Kentucky. Are
you concerned for your safety?
Yeah, I was going to say. So you want to incite violence after a Kentucky win?
I never said violence.
Well, no, but I'm not saying that you're going to commit violence, but you're going to you're asking for someone to get very angry with you.
You're asking for a mustard bottle to the head that way.
And all I have to do is just smile, kill him with kindness, and say, great game. That's how I chirp, because when you win,
wouldn't
it's
mean
great.
It. You wouldn't mean it.
See, we had this whole debate last week, Adam, on the program, Kentucky or Tennessee.
Yes.
Which Robbie got pretty heated, because I said, like, Kentucky right now is a better program than Tennessee. I don't think that's even.
I don't know. Doesn't their quarterback put mayo in his coffee?
He does.
Will Levis does. And eats bananas with the peel on.
So which bothers
What's
you
wrong
more?
With him?
So what bothers you more, mustard bottles hitting the field or mayo in a coffee?
Mayo in a coffee.
No, it's nasty. I like that video from SEC Media Days.
Did he explain it? Like, did he just do it?
I've heard some other people say they do it too, and it's like, how would you even come up with that?
If you do it, let us know so that I can shame you on the air. Like, and I'm not. I mean, I came onto coffee late in life. Only iced coffee, though. I don't like hot coffee. But
that's weird.
Yeah, it's just mayo and coffee. I saw the video and I threw up in my mouth a little bit. So on that alone, Kentucky should lose that game. For that alone.
But see, Will Levis's coffee habits
aside,
should not. That should not impact the program discussion.
No.
Regardless. The problem for Kentucky is that even though they have had a better program, Tennessee has been in complete turmoil and obviously has not been able to sustain anything. They still beat Kentucky. It's kind of wild, Michelle. I'm just saying.
They Kentucky beat Florida and Tennessee lost to Florida. We can play this game, Joe.
Was that the transitive property?
Oh, we're going to do transitive football now. Transitive football. But also, the thing, Roman Harper, another point he made there, which I have to take issue with, is Tennessee would have won two more games had Hendon Hooker been the starting quarterback. Now, of course, you know at some point the Tennessee discussion has to turn to Joe Milton. So here we go.
Here we go.
I don't know that I buy that. Now, Milton missed a lot of opportunities in that Pittsburgh game for sure early. They were, honestly, the problem that Tennessee had in that game is they just couldn't stop Kenny Pickett and Jordan Addison and those guys, you know. And there was a bad call late on a run that I thought was a clear first down, some things like that. They still had a chance to win. I don't know. What would be the second win, though, is what I'm trying to understand. I guess he's trying to say that if Hendon Hooker had been in place, then they would have just performed better for the Florida game. Again, that's another game that, you know, it ends up being 38-14. They were actually hanging in pretty well, and then it got away from them. I don't know that I'd buy that Hendon Hooker, if he's in earlier, all of a sudden they're going to play better in that game. But they're not going to win the Alabama-Georgia game, and the Ole Miss loss was a tough one. Now, granted, I will agree that if Hendon Hooker was in the game at the end, you know, he would have at least thrown into the end zone, unlike what Joe Milton did. So I guess I'll give him that. That could be the other one, I suppose. But, look, Hendon Hooker, how good can he be this year? I agree with Robbie that the numbers are going to be hard to exceed. I mean, just ridiculous numbers. But those coaches absolutely believe that he's better. He's in more command. He's in more command of the game planning week by week. He's become a leader on the team, even though he's kind of a soft-spoken guy by nature. I think he's on his way to potentially a special season. William on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHound.com, says, Vols go 7-6. Tennessee fans act like they're a 10-2 team. Actually, they're a 7-6 team with a terrible defense. All this talk is blasphemy. Billy from Bellevue, please say my name properly. Thanks, Joe. And here we go. Anchored down. So we got the Vanderbilt
Vols
fans.
Joe.
Got the, well, GB Joe or Vandy Joe. Some Tennessee fans have called me Vandy Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And now flip it around and I'm GB Joe.
Or but the, BBN
it's,
Joe.
It's good to see. Yeah. Well,
no.
I love some Coach Cal. Love some Coach Cal. We haven't even gotten into, like, we haven't even taken any shots. You've been on this show now for an hour and a half. We haven't taken any shots at Coach K. But we will get to that this week. I promise you. But for now, we're going to
see John Shire throw a great first pitch yesterday at the Cubs game.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
Well, that's exciting.
Former Mr. Basketball of Illinois.
Oh, yes. I remember his recruitment well because I think I called him back then because, like, Michigan State wanted him badly.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels like 5 years ago, and now he's the freaking head coach of Duke. My God, how depressing. All right, we're going to get back into the Titans when we come back. The guy on the offensive line who is really opening eyes of late when we come back on Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. $20 buys you lunch, buys you pizza and a cold beer, or could put a new pair of shoes on the feet of a homeless child in Middle Tennessee. That's what Souls for Music City is all about, raising money to make that happen. Will you please help us in that effort? Text DONATE to 615-737-1025 and make a $20 donation. More if you'd like, but $20 is all we're asking for. Let's make a difference in the life of a child, one pair of shoes at a time. Thank you so much for your help. Welcome back, Robbie Rexrode. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Joe Rexrode, Adam Vingan in for Robbie. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. And we are talking Titans and the offensive line and the one spot, Adam, that I believe is actually up for grabs right now. I have moved off the idea of two spots up for grabs. I think Aaron Brewer is the Titans' left guard until further notice. I do not know who will be the Titans' right tackle on opening week. The last few days have opened my eyes to the absolute possibility that could be Nicholas Petit-Frere, third-round rookie out of Ohio State. And yesterday, after practice, a nice little scrum interview with Petit-Frere. For those who don't know, Taylor Lewan, I think Friday, talked about his intellectual personality and compared him to Rain Man, Dustin Hoffman's character in the movie. So that was part of the backstory of this interview with Petit-Frere yesterday.
What do you mean by that? Like shifted up
to work with Lewan.
Oh, okay. It's been great. I mean, whenever you're working with great guys like that, it's always great for you to learn from them and improve. I'm just trying to do my best to do whatever I can to be the best teammate I can be accountable, be coachable, and be able to be a great teammate.
There's some super physical stuff yesterday in 2 minutes. Maybe that was the first time you were up there with against Harold, against DeMarcus. How much juice you feel like you're bringing out of the gate?
Yeah, that was my first time, going up against them. Well, in 2 minutes, but I got to bring juice every single play. It doesn't matter whether I'm with the ones, the twos, the threes. Whenever you're on the field, you're a starter. That's what I learned from Ohio State. That's the mindset here. It doesn't matter when you get on the field, you're a starter.
Did you get any feedback on the one rep against Harold 2 days ago? You got the big punch. I'm sure you know the play I'm talking about in pass pro.
Yeah, we watched the film. I had a good set. The main thing I've been working on is staying square, making sure I play with a lot of length. Those are things that we teach here, so I did my technique correctly, and it paid off, so I got to keep doing it.
You talked about your hands when you arrived and your punch, maybe your feet were rated well, your hands not so much. How much progress have you made since you got here with your hands?
A lot. I mean, that's something that Coach Vrabel and Coach Carter have talked about, that we need to have great violence in our punches. That's what we teach here. So that's something that I don't just work on that on the field. I work on that off the field as well, in the weight room as well, so hopefully that's been paying off. Hopefully that's been showing, and I can keep improving on it.
Can you give us an example of the kind of things you do that inside that pay off outside?
We have a difference drill. So that's something that we do at Ohio State as well. We call it the difference. It's a pad that we do, and it kind of has and we just go into it, and we whack on our strikes and punches, and it shows us how good our hand speed is, speed and accuracy. So that's what I've been doing inside and outside. Same thing, working on hand punches, speed and accuracy of it, making sure I get to my landmarks, things like that.
How much different are you feeling maybe now compared to even going back to rookie camp as far as technique and comfortability?
I feel better. I mean, like I've said before, and what we said here on the team is about getting as many reps as you can, as many competitive reps as you can, because that's when you build great habits and that's when you become a better player.
Tigers kind of said you got kind of a Rain Man vibe to you. Did you hear that and think that was a big compliment?
I never watched that movie, so I'm just gonna say nothing to that and just keep it moving. But maybe I'll watch that movie tonight after I get out, and I'll get back on that.
But in general, he's talked about you being an intellectual. Other people, is that talked about in the room with you guys?
I mean, sure, but I mean, what I can say is that every single one of us is intellectual. I mean, there's a reason why we're here. There's a reason why Vrabel thought we'd be great people here, great players, because you need to be smart to be on this offensive line. You also need to be violent and physical. So,
who are the guys that maybe keep you humble or keep you in check? I see you wearing three helmets, got your pads. Who are the veterans that kind of give you the rookie treatment with that?
All of them.
Yeah.
I get humbled in multiple ways. I mean, going up against great guys, that's the way to get humbled, because you're going up against the best of the best in the NFL. So if you lose a rep, you got to learn how to come back and get a better rep next time, find a way to win those reps. And then in the O-line room, if you make a mistake, we're always accountable for each other. We always tell each other what we did wrong, but we understand that we're still improving. We're still trying to be the best that we can be.
As a rookie, how much are you looking forward to the first preseason game, getting out there against another team?
I mean, huge. I mean, I get a chance to be an NFL get a chance to be on an NFL field against the Baltimore Ravens, Buccaneers, Cardinals, and then we have a bunch of games after that in the regular season. Hopefully we make it to the playoffs. Like, it's an amazing chance, it's an amazing opportunity, and I'm very grateful for it.
Would you say today was probably one of the more physical practices camp overall?
I mean, every day is physical. I mean, I'm not going to say that one day is more physical than the other. We're always working hard.
What are things like between you and Dylan when you're competing but also trying to help each other out?
I mean, it's great. I mean, me and Dylan always work out together. We always talk about everything we do with technique and stuff. You see Taylor over there. Like, it's all the vets. Like, whether you're an older vet like Taylor or whether you're a younger vet like Dylan, like, they all help you every single day.
Good talking to you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Check out Rain Man. It's good.
All right.
And that was Nicholas Petitfrère.
Was that Kaharski at the end recommending Rain Man? Check it out.
I think it was. And right before that, it was Taylor Lewan saying something. Blah, 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 as he walked by. I don't know.
The highest
exactly
grossing film of 1988.
Is that right? Man. That's a great movie.
The other two, number two and three. Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Hey, don't
and
tell
Coming
me.
To America.
Oh.
Where
well,
the,
thank that,
those were the top three grossing films of 1988.
I say all great films.
They are all good films. They all are great films.
I'm gonna rank Coming to America first of those three. That's just me. I think that might be Eddie Murphy's best movie, and that's a big, big statement. So your thoughts, Adam, and by the way, Robbie and Rexroad, Joe Rexroad, Adam Vingan in for Robbie. Your thoughts on that interview on the idea of the rookie, Nicholas Petitfrère, really making a run now at Dylan Radins at right tackle.
So I saw an interesting story on ESPN.com a couple of days ago by Seth Walder, who works for the ESPN analytics department, and he ranked all 32 teams' offensive lines based on their projected pass and run block win rates for next season. And the way that he came up with that is by looking at the pass performance of each projected starter over the previous two seasons. So the number one team on that list is the Kansas City Chiefs, just to give you a sense of where things are. You have to scroll all the way to the bottom of the page before you land at number 27 out of 32, the Tennessee Titans. And the projected starters on this article were Taylor Lewan, Aaron Brewer, Ben Jones, Nate Davis, and Dylan Radins. And he gives them, Seth Walder, a predicted pass block rank of number 22 and a predicted run block rank of number 31. So Derrick Henry might not have it easy this year, according to these analytics. And, of course, as we know, analytics only tell part of the story. It's important to see it with your eyes as well, but they are educational and informative. So, the fact that Dylan Radins, he didn't play, right? He didn't play for a full year, right?
No, he was inactive most Sundays. He was forced into action. No,
but even before that, in college, didn't he miss a year of college?
Yes, and of course, playing at the FCS level anyway.
Yeah,
and played like I think one game in the 2020 season.
Yeah,
one or two, very very limited action. Yes, he's been very, there's an understandable big learning curve there with him.
Yeah,
but at this point, I think right now it's we're trying to find out, because here's the thing. With Radins and Petitfrère, it is possible, not too far down the future, that they could be both candidates to be starting tackles for the Tennessee Titans, depending on Taylor Lewan and how the Titans want to proceed with the money they're paying him. So that's another part of this to consider.
Well, based on what you have seen in camp so far, what advantages does Dylan Radins have over Petitfrère and vice versa?
Well, again, I think Petitfrère he is a very impressive. He just has like the feet and the size that there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
His size and power, I feel like that's where he has an advantage over Dylan Radins. Dylan Radins, you would think, would have, I think maybe he has a little bit of advantage in mobility. And I think he's played fine in camp. There's still so much to find out with that.
Yeah.
But Petitfrère, certainly, you can see with him, I think even potentially as a left tackle in this league at some point, could be in his future if he progresses. Said to be raw when of Ohio State. He also doesn't have a ton of in-game snaps under his belt coming into the NFL. So I think there's just a lot to work with there.
Do you think the ranking that I just listed of the Titans as number 27 out of 32 in predicted effectiveness is too high, too low, or just right?
It doesn't surprise me. I think it could be there. But the thing that surprises me is I would almost flip-flop the pass versus run blocking.
So you think they'll do better in the run blocking than they will in the pass blocking?
I do. Now, they lose Roger Saffold, the best run blocker. So how's that going to work out with Aaron Brewer? I think Radins and Petitfrère have very good potential as run blockers.
Radins, according to this article, by the way, had a 54% run block win rate over 118 snaps at tackle and guard, which would have been the worst run block win rate at either position had he played enough to qualify.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot to prove, obviously. You know, another thing I would look at with all of this is a big hope for the Titans is Lawan. Mm-hmm. He's not coming off an ACL anymore, so right. Can he be great? And then Nate Davis had a lot of issues physically last year. Can he get back to what I thought in 2020 was a track to be like a top guard in this league? He was not that last year. Mm-hmm. If those guys get back, you know, into top form, then you like where they're going. When we come back, it's time for a little Rex rant on Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Hey, Robbie Stanley here to tell you about my friends at Twin Peaks, and they're ready to hook you up for your fantasy football draft party. And they include a draft board, player stickers, free Wi-Fi, a $50 bonus for the commission, a $5 bonus card for each drafter as well. That's a pretty sweet deal. And when you're not on the clock, just relax with one of their refreshing 29-degree beers. Or you got a lot of things you can snack on, like the double stacked nachos, loaded fries, and multiple flavors of great boneless wings. Call Twin Peaks in Cool Springs to book your fantasy football draft party at 615-221-0869.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Cause you make my heart race. Shot me out of the sky. You're my kryptonite.
You Robbie and Rex Road, coming on back for the Rex Rant. 102.5, 106.3 The Game, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio, by the way. And Adam Vingan, your reaction? Adam Vingan in for Robbie Stanley. Your reaction to this little ditty that Michelle seems to like to play a lot.
A little, little 1D?
1D, I like that.
No, that's it. One Direction, 1D.
I know. Shorthand. I like
shorthand.
I like the shorthand. First of all,
I don't mind it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty bad. But it's, you know, it's fine. You know, I may have to change my Rex rant. You asked earlier,
yes,
Adam, what is this? If this is what I think it is, oh, my God, on NBA TV, on the TV. I don't even know why NBA TV is on the TV. That is, I think this is game five. Oh, my God.
Uh-oh. The Pistons are on.
Pistons-Celtics, game five, 1987. Maybe the worst moment of my sports fandom. Isaiah Thomas inbounds. All they have to do is inbound the ball and just get fouled and win and go on to win the series and go on to the NBA Finals. And Larry Bird steals the ball and finds Dennis Johnson cutting for a layup at the buzzer.
LB.
Or with, like, whatever, a second left. If this is that game.
We're going to rant about that.
Yeah. Well, okay. I guess I can rant or I can just cry about it tomorrow. But actually, my Rex rant today is going to be a Rex tribute?
Rave? A Rex rave?
Yeah, there you go. A rave.
A Rex rave.
I want to do a little rave today. You know, it's Monday, positivity. There's a lot of options out there to get angry about. I mean, Pete Rose is out there you read the whole Pete Rose story to me earlier, Adam.
Yes.
That's rant worthy. My God, man. Just shut your mouth. We've also got – there's plenty of, you know, anonymous parents who may complain about unnamed teenagers that could always continue. But today I'm going to do a Rex rave because this weekend had a terrific experience. The memorial for Floyd Reese, of course, who passed away, a year ago tragically and way too early. And a guy who a lot of people loved and a guy who meant a ton to sports in this city. You know, still the guy who put together the best Tennessee Titans teams that ever took the field. Right, frankly, I guess some could argue with this, going back to those Dan Pastorini, Earl Campbell teams that couldn't get over the hump against the Steelers, I would argue the best teams in the history of the franchise. and you also would then go back to the early 60s AFL chance. But I feel good about saying that. You know, the teams of 20 years ago in that McNair George era, best teams ever put together, incredible job as GM. Of course, you know, everyone knows and loves Floyd Reese. This was, you know, a year later, and it was a tremendous event. But the big thing that I want to rave about, two people in particular, Amy Adams Strunk, Jared Stillman.
You're going to rave about Stillman.
Would you ever have guessed
no.
that you would even have those two together, but also in a rave situation? But I was reminded at this event, which, you know, a lot of people there. It was there was some good Michigan State Spartan love with D Mace and Benji Olsen's kid, former Titans lineman, going to Michigan State, by the way. Pretty exciting. But a lot of, you know, John Robinson was there. A lot of Titans brass were there. But Amy Adams Strunk was there, which, first of all, I think is very cool for her to show up and be at this event at the Reese household. But also, of course, Jared was there. They actually had a nice conversation. And, I don't need to reveal specifics other than to say I think it's really, really a big deal that Floyd Reese found out that, you know, that he was in the Ring of Honor before he passed away. And I was reminded, you know, talking to Sally and talking to other people, how important that was. And I don't, you know, I don't think that happens without both, obviously Amy, but also Jared. And so I just want to give a shout out to Amy Adams Strunk again for showing up and for, you know, she's done a lot of things, obviously very well as controlling owner of the Titans. But for making that happen, you know, it's a year later, and you're reminded all over again about what he meant to people, who he was as a person. But also, that really stayed with me afterward, that the fact that he was able to enjoy that, know it, absorb it, and have a wonderful conversation with her about it. While he was, of course, you know, fighting for his life, I think that's really, really important. So that's my rave. That's my shout out for the day. And Jared, big part of making that happen, and should be really commended for it. So there you go.
No, I'm glad that could happen. And you know, especially on this station, we all miss Floyd. You know, it certainly hasn't been the same without him. You know, hopefully, you know, his family is doing well.
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah, it is.
A situation like that, and again, it's way too early. Cancer is a terrible thing. And, you know, it's I will say, too, was able to meet some people who were in kindergarten with Floyd and Sally.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't realize this. They knew each other in kindergarten. Now, they weren't like she moved away. She moved away and then back. But think about that. You got friends from kindergarten, you know, who fly from California over here, who you stayed tight with the whole time. So
it's a pretty great crew of
people. What's that?
I don't remember anybody I knew in kindergarten.
Yeah, you know, I remember a girl I had a crush on in first grade.
Uh-huh.
But I'm with you. I don't think I could name a kid. Like, I name a full name of someone who I went to kindergarten with.
Oh, I could you? Probably list off about 10.
Yeah, because you were in kindergarten last year.
Oh, man. Thinking
we're only like 5 years apart.
She's a professor.
That is yes, true. Yes,
that is Professor MKDU. That's
Professor K.
When you get there, I don't know if they have blackboards anymore, but are you going to attempt to spell out your last name and just be like, just call me Professor K?
Yeah, that or Michelle. Like, we could go first name. We're all adults here, you know?
Yeah. I mean, in college, like a lot of professors are just like, yeah, like call me Jim or whatever.
Mm. I got ripped a new one time when I called them professor and their name instead of doctor.
Ooh.
I got in big trouble.
Oh, the doctor thing's a little different. So when you say 10, but did you go to the same school your entire time?
All the way through.
Yeah. So that's another part of it too. Did you?
No. I went to I was in private school in elementary school and sixth grade, and then went to public school seventh grade through 12th grade.
So if you, and I suppose this is the case here, you know, if you go with the same classmates right. all if the way through, then you're going to remember.
If you're in a private school and it's a small class and you are with the same kids from kindergarten through senior year, that, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but it's still, you're talking, you know, let's face it, you're talking going way back with this situation and still, you know, best friends with some of these people, which I thought was pretty awesome. But regardless, again, I know some folks on the text line, Chris H. on the text line, driven by WilsonCounty.com, says, "Hey, Adam, does Joe look feverish or sick?
Because you've lost 11 pounds in a week?"
No, I don't think so. This is unexpected. Haha, much respect for Joe for putting aside personal feelings and honoring the GM like that.
Well,
putting aside personal.
That's the whole point of the Rex rant.
Now, wait a minute. Maybe he means putting aside the personal feelings on honoring Jared?
Yes.
Because I didn't have any bad personal feelings toward Floyd. I don't know.
You can get a shot in at Jared before the break. You can get a shot in at Jared before the break.
I've ranted before and supported Jared, by the way, when he had the Aaron Rodgers report, which was just like, look, it is newsworthy. Mm-hmm. He did not say at that point Aaron Rodgers signing with the Titans. He said he's building a house here. And people went off on it because he's Jared. And, hey, he brings that on.
Yes.
And real quick, I will say this. I met Jared's parents.
Yes.
And they wanted to shake my hand. I said, no, I'm hugging both of you. And I was a little nervous because, like, if I was Jared's parent, I might not like all the crap we give him.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I am now emboldened after talking to them to be harder on Jared.
Huh.
Because they were like, basically like, get him, get him.
Well, if I know anything, you know, as a fellow Jew, because Jared's also Jewish, I know how Jewish parents are. They want their children to, they want their kids to have their chops busted. I was going to say another word instead of chops. That's why it took me a second to think about it.
Easy.
They want their chops busted. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that with your dad. Your dad definitely seems to like to bust your chops. And
yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Jewish
parents. I didn't realize that was a Jewish thing.
I mean, it's probably every parent kind of thing, but, you know, I can stereotype because I'm Jewish too. So
that's right. All right, when we come back on Robbie and Rexall, we're going to have Corey Curtis from News 2, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.